Welcome to the podcast from the Conferences for Women. I'm Celeste Headley, and starting next month, I'll host this podcast and talk with some brilliant women who can help you succeed in your work life and your personal life. Today, though, we'll look back to a conversation I had in February with the one and only Gloria Steinem at the Watermark Conference for Women in San Jose.
Feminism isn't something that only happens at a march, it happens every moment of our lives.
Gloria started her career as a journalist and made headlines when she went undercover at the Playboy Mansion as a bunny in 1963. She co-founded Ms. Magazine and has been a leader in the feminist movement for decades. I started the conversation by asking about her experiences as a protester.
It's always been disproportionately black women, so we're going through from the 60s through the 80s.
How did we get to this place then? Because, you know, look, I'm mixed race, so I should know all this history, but the history I was taught in my California public schools, every time you looked at this section on feminism, which was like three pages, it was Susan B. Anthony and you and...
Well, that's now we're locked in a battle over statues, you know, because we're trying to say it wasn't just Susan B. Anthony. It was
so
all
tell
these
me
black,
the story of the black statues. You're fighting over statues in Central Park.
Yeah, right. Because there were, you know, hundreds of black suffragists, of course, and also... The white suffragists kind of learned that there could be an equal society from Native American women, especially upstate, the Iroquois Confederacy women, right? Women's movement is why the civil rights... This always happened to me because for like however many, 20 years, I was always lecturing with a partner, with Flo or Dorothy or...
Black women.
Yeah, right. And whenever there was a press conference... little one on a campus or a big one someplace else, you know, the reporters would always first ask me about the women's movement and Flo or Dorothy or whoever about the civil rights movement. And, you know, we would let it happen and then point it out. And, you know, if it was Margaret Sloan, she would do the entire Ain't I a Woman speech. And, you know,
right.
Because it's never been accurate.
So... have you ever had to make a calculation over which conferences to appear at and which not to? I have a very well-known colleague in media who, as a female journalist, will no longer speak at women's events because she wants to stop talking or separating herself out as a female. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have to make these calculations about how you're seen or how you're perceived or where you choose to speak and where you don't?
I have a little guidelines in my head, you know, like I'll never appear in a photograph that represents the movement that's all white. If there's a panel, I'll never do a panel if it's all white, you know. And it doesn't always work, you know, sometimes you get there and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
But, you know, in recommending people, I try to point that out. But that still is not right because it's... puts me in the position of making the decision when actually in real life it's women of color who have been more likely to be making the decision. Right.
How do we change some of these decisions that are made? Because at this point, if you're on a panel, it's more likely to be all male, right? Or if they do have a woman, she's women. They're the ones at the conference who are speaking on women's issues.
Mm-hmm. You can still say I'm not appearing on a panel, unless it has a function. You know,
right.
It might have a function to be... all one thing. But if it doesn't have a function, it has a general subject. To just say I don't do panels that are all men or women, or unless it makes sense. I mean, remember the Young Presidents organization?
Mm-hmm.
For years, they used to ask me to speak, and I would say, do you have any women? No. Do you have any black? No. You know, then finally, they got like one of each, and I had to go speak to this terrible...
and you're regretting having agreed.
Right.
So a question I hear a lot from women is what to do about crying. Women are deathly afraid to cry ever at work because they feel it undermines them. Do you think that it can be undermining? And what is a woman to do when she needs to cry?
Well, I was greatly instructed quite a long time ago by a woman top level executive who said, because I also, if I get mad, I cry, especially... it's related to anger in my experience, and it makes you afraid to express anger.
Exactly.
Because you're going to... And she was a very upper-level executive in Minnesota, I think, and she said that she had this problem when she got mad, she cried. So, she said, She just started to cry and talked through it. And she said to her male colleagues, "You may think I am sad. No, I am angry. This is the way I got it." And she just talked through it.
I want to focus a little bit on, you have, especially in recent years, been emphasizing in-person connection and in-person communication as opposed to using hashtag activism or using mm-hmm. social media for all of your connections. Why is this such a priority for you?
Because, as I was saying, we do not produce oxytocin, the hormone that allows us not just to learn or know, but to empathize, to understand, unless we are present with all five senses. Much as I love books, it doesn't happen on the page. I asked my friendly neurologist if we produced oxytocin other than being together in all five senses. She said no, actually. And that's why when a man or woman holds a baby, you're flooded with oxytocin, you bond. Or when you see someone having an accident, you don't know that person, but you feel you want to help. So without that, the human race probably wouldn't have survived. And we need to balance the hours in front of a screen with hours that we are fully present.
You're not saying stop using your smartphone.
No, but just consider that it should be balanced. I mean, I saw a survey, I can't believe it's right, it said the average American spends 11 hours a day with a screen
yep.
between phone and computer and everything.
That's and TVs like, and tablets. And
yeah, it's not giving up the miracle of technology, but it's balancing it with being... There's a reason why solitary confinement is torture, because we're communal animals. If we're alone for long, we can't, you know, we can barely survive.
Can you think of a time when meeting someone in person really changed you?
Oh, yes. You know, you have a picture of someone, and then in person they turn out quite different, or you feel a connection to them that you didn't think. I think in the celebrity-crazed moment that we're in, it's especially obvious, because you feel differently when you actually meet the person, don't you? I mean, when you're interviewing
absolutely.
People and you, yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Both on the positive and the negative.
Yeah,
and that,
no, exactly,
yeah.
Right. No, sometimes you know they're an asshole that you didn't know.
So for young women trying to figure out what feminism is,
mm-hmm.
There's been a relatively successful campaign to turn feminist into an insult.
Mm.
And so there's a large number of women, I can't remember what the poll is, I think Pew Research polled it, who say they don't call themselves feminists. What would be your answer to those women who are afraid to use that word?
Well, what the situation you describe, I think, has diminished, don't you? I mean, because the day of I'm not a feminist, but... And then they go through supporting all the... I don't see that now. I mean, I see much more pride and pop culture and craziness and wonderful stuff around the word feminist. And, of course, you can call yourself a women's liberationist or... there's other wonderful... I don't
gender
know.
Equality.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be, you know, just
you
one
don't
word,
have to
but
put
it's
that F word.
But it's the meaning. But sometimes I just say, well, you have two choices. You can be a feminist if you're a woman. You can be a feminist or a masochist.
That's fair.
But only I don't often say that. But I.
That's fair, though.
Yeah.
But what do you think is what is the most impactful activity? Let's say. This is a woman with kids and also a busy job, and everyone's spending 50 to 60 hours a week at their job
mm-hmm.
lately and taking their work home with them on their smartphones, and work life and home life has blended to the point where people are never off
mm-hmm.
work, right, unless they're sleeping. So what is the way that someone can really leverage their time if they can't go to the Women's March, if they can't do all of these things?
But feminism isn't something that only happens at a march. It happens every moment of our lives. So when you speak up at work about how come the support staff is not being treated well and you're an executive or whatever it is, it's interwoven into everything we do. If you are making sure, suppose you're a single mother raising kids, if you're making sure that you have male babysitters so they know that men can be loving and nurturing just like women, that's a feminist act. It's just something that's part of everything you do. It's not a separate thing over there.
So as we're in this Me Too moment, there has already been the backlash saying that Me Too has gone too far. And one of the things that interested me is that there was this triumphant headline that said, you know, 48% of the men taken down by Me Too have been replaced by women. Mm-hmm. And my first thought was that means 52% of the men who got booted because of sexual harassment and assault were replaced by men.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you make of the Me Too movement, whether it has achieved a milestone mm-hmm. already, whether how far it still has to go?
Mm. Well, you know, one of the good things about being old is we remember when it was worse, okay? So we have hope. I remember when women, I think at Cornell University, who had been working at summer jobs, hundreds of them, and they were trying to describe what happened to them, and they coined the phrase sexual harassment. And then we did a cover story on it and got put off the newsstands in supermarkets. Then Kitty McKinnon, Catherine McKinnon, wrote it into sex discrimination law for both men and women, that it's harassment is a form of discrimination. Then there were four lawsuits, all brought by black women, every one, you know, our previous argument. And then, then there was Anita Hill. And the country got a consciousness raising. So it's been a progression, and now it's just tilted over into a majority movement, or consciousness anyway, that allows women who are farm workers to say what's happening to them in the fields, or who are movie stars.
Yeah.
It's a truth-telling in the past couple of years that I haven't seen before in the majority, and therefore a likelihood of being believed that has increased. It still takes on campus, I think, four women, it's either three or four women, accusing the same man of the same behavior before that person is stopped. But believing women has really changed in the last couple of years, don't you think?
Do you see what happened with Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation as progress because his accuser got more respect?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you see it as a sign of a lack of progress because in the end, just like Clarence Thomas, he was, he took his seat on the Supreme Court.
Well, he kind of, the votes were there on the way in. There was no real way. And of course, one of the people who voted wrong was a woman.
Yeah.
It was extremely unlikely that he was not going to be confirmed. So the her courage in coming forward, I think, like Anita Hill's courage in coming forward, has been a big step forward, even though the institutional loss is huge.
Though they did say that the Kavanaugh hearings had a bigger impact in terms of motivating Republican women than Democratic. And I wondered if you had any idea why that was. More conservative women were encouraged to go to the polls, they said, than liberal.
In what sense? I mean, to vote in...
In other words, that they were going to go to the polls and choosing to vote because of the Kavanaugh hearing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a larger number.
Because they believed... They believed Kavanaugh, or they...
Yes, they believed Kavanaugh, and they saw what happened to him as a threat, a real danger.
Mm-hmm. First of all, there are not many Republican... So it's a percentage of a smaller group. But I do think that we as women have been trained to protect the male ego and to feel dependent on it. That's where our income comes from. That's where our identity comes from. We're more worried about them than we are. We're more worried about our sons than our daughters. Some women are. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think. And they are more likely to be in the Republican Party in the first place.
Right. So then you've also talked about how you waited until later in life to get married because when you were young, marriage was akin to slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't toss around slavery as a word.
Right.
But
without using that word,
yeah,
servitude.
Right, right. Well, I just would have lost all my civil rights, in a sense, because I would have lost my name, my legal domicile, my credit rating, my ability to get a loan. I mean, you know, it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Even to have authority over my own body. If I wanted to get sterilized, for instance, I would have to have 3 children and my husband's permission. I mean, it was insane. It was insane. That wasn't the only reason I didn't get married. But later in life, we had changed all those laws. They were all gone. You could actually make an equal marriage. And when I got married, the one remaining step was same genders, same sex marriage, which was clearly on the way, but hadn't quite happened yet, right? So the reason, I mean, we loved each other and we wanted to be together, but the reason we got married was he needed a green card.
Yeah.
You're right. So, and I thought, okay, you know.
I can do this for you.
We can do it. Why not? We're going to be together anyway. And also, Wilma offered us a...
Wilma Mankiller.
Yeah, Wilma Mankiller offered us a Cherokee ceremony. So who could resist that?
Before we end this conversation, I really want to talk about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
One of your books was dedicated to the doctor who performed your abortion. And I wonder if there was any sense after Roe v. Wade that it would have been settled.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg always said that we should have gone state by state rather than have a Supreme Court federal ruling. I don't know if we could have done that, but I think we've always known that reproduction is the rock bottom. I mean, look, we only have one thing that men don't have, a womb, all right? So it's all about controlling reproduction. And so resistance to abortion and contraception and control of our own bodies is not going to go. You know, people who say, oh, I can't believe we're still fighting this issue, I think would be helped by understanding that this is the issue. That reproduction
is. This issue to global warming.
Yes, well, of course, yes, because overpopulation is a fundamental huge cause of global warming. And if you let women decide when and whether to have children, it levels off. It's something a little above replacement level, because some women have 1 and some have 6 and some have none. And, you know, it kind of works out because it's our physical welfare at stake. You know, it's kind of naturally self-limiting,
yes.
right? But women have for centuries been forced to have children we would not otherwise have had, and much younger with child marriage. You know, teenage pregnancy is the biggest cause of teenage death in the world because our bodies are not ready yet to have children.
So do you think that the next step, the most powerful step that could be taken on abortion, is another Supreme Court decision? Or do you think, as Justice Ginsburg has said, that it's time to go state to state?
Well, the opposition is going state to state in any case.
Yes.
You know, because they're closing down clinics, as in Texas, where, you know, people have to travel hundreds of miles.
And Mississippi.
Their first tactic was, if you'll remember, bombing and killing people. And they murdered 8 abortion doctors or personnel, I think, as well as bombing a lot of clinics. They seemed surprised. This did not make them popular, but...
Eric Rudolph, people forget, they only remember him for bombing the Olympics in Atlanta, but he actually was an abortion...
Oh, I'd forgotten that,
activist
too, yeah.
...and killed a doctor.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the tactic has turned, as we can see, from... It's been quite a while, a few years, since a clinic has been bombed or an abortion doctor has been shot. But rather, they have turned to state legislatures and making impossible regulations to close clinics.
So before we go, I don't want to end on that note.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hope, what's your biggest bright star on the horizon on this, in these issues?
Well, because I wander around, as I do, you know, I get to see the level of activism that is just, you know, like nothing I've ever seen before. And I do feel about young women that as I always say to them, you know, I just had to wait for some of my friends to be born. You know, I'm so glad you're here. You know, right. I don't know that it's enough. I don't know, you know. But it is more than I've ever seen before in my life. It is now a majority. And that's why the worst time is, I think we should learn that the worst time, most dangerous time, is right after a success. I mean, you know, lynching did not happen during slavery, it happened after abolition. And we had, the majority opinions have changed. We had 8 years of Obama. The third of the country that's mad as hell is mad as hell, and they control, right. Nowhere is it written that the backlash might not win, but it is amazing that it is no longer the majority. It is no longer. It really is about a third.
Let's hope. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Conferences for Women podcast. We have some outstanding episodes coming this fall for you that you will not want to miss. So be sure to sign up for a newsletter at your local conference website. There you'll also find links to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned, and we'll talk again in September. Be kind and be well.